these very powerful drugs that impact our hormonal health. So for that reason, it just needs to be, it needs the level of respect. Using these drugs are not just you just go on that and that's a rite of passage and away you go. They need to be given the level of respect and the level of care and a level of you use them if and when you need them. But there are alternatives. You know, where's the education for the whole picture? And why I talk about, you know, becoming our own contraception expert is because we have so many years of needing this that there'll be different things that'll be suitable at different times.
Welcome to the Wildflow podcast with me, Charlotte Pronto, certified cycle and feminine embodiment coach and shamanic womb guide. In this podcast, I'll share my wisdom and conversations with powerful change makers, thought leaders, and embodied teachers to invite you to live cyclically in flow with your menstrual cycle instead of fearing it, to heal menstrual shame and normalize womb wisdom and period positivity, and to step into your sovereign magnetic power to create and embody the change you desire to see in your world. Settle in to unleash your wild flow. Jane Bennett is a powerhouse in the menstrual education world, having been working to support women and children to understand their fertility and contraception naturally for many decades. She's empowered multiple generations to take back their bodies and be well educated and informed to make healthy choices for themselves with regards to managing fertility and contraception naturally, and that doesn't need to involve taking hormonal birth control. I loved meeting Jane for the first time. It's such a perk of doing this podcast. I get to have conversations with people that I admire and respect and have learned so much from, such as Jane. We spoke in this podcast episode about Jane's mission and her journey to creating the legacy that she's built, what the different types of contraception are and how they work, why you might want to consider not taking hormonal birth control and what it's like to actually come off that, and how we can also share this information with teens so they can make informed choices for themselves. Jane Bennett is a menstrual educator and author with a background in social work and clinical hypnotherapy. She has worked with Natural Fertility Management since 1990, and in 2000, Jane created Celebration Day for Girls, a program for 10 to 12-year-old girls with their mothers and later fathers celebrating daughters for dads. She now trains facilitators all over the world who are available in over 25 countries. She's an author who has written many, many amazing books, including A Blessing Not a Curse, Girltopia, A World of Real Conversations for Real Girls, About Bloody Time, The Menstrual Revolution We Have to Have, The Pill, Are You Sure It's for You, and many more. In 2017, Jane founded the Chalice Foundation, which is a not-for-profit social enterprise dedicated to menstrual well-being, education, and positive menstrual culture, through which she works closely with the Victorian Women's Trust. She relishes life in the granite wilds of central Victoria in Australia with her family. So I really hope that you enjoy this conversation and take some information from this about looking after yourself, making right choices for you and your family. And if you want to find out more, I'll pop all of the links from the conversation in the show notes as well. Happy listening. Welcome, Jane, to the Wildflow podcast. How are you today?
I'm terrific, and I'm really excited to be here with you, Charlotte.
Oh, thank you so much. It's a conversation I'm really looking forward to having. So, as always, I love to start with a cycle check-in, and I would love to ask you, Jane, if you have a cycle, where you are in your cycle and how that feels for you, and if not, just how you connect with your cyclical nature, if you do, and what that feels like for you today.
Thank you. Well, I'm about, if I was to, for as far as the menstrual cycle goes, I'm on about day 6,000 and something.
Amazing.
So I haven't had a period for the last 13 years. And in my last year of having a menstrual cycle, I just had two little bleeds, which is how it goes with menopause. And so for me, I had many years of practicing menstrual cycle awareness, which, as you and your listeners would know, is just an incredible journey of self-awareness and self-knowledge. And so I feel like that set me up really well for the menopause transition. And so these days, not having a very clear indications of a menstrual cycle and obviously no menstrual cycle, the learning from that time really helped me be respectful of and tuned into what my needs are at different times. So I can have times of being really, really busy and going for it and running after lots of projects, and times where I really pull back to rest and really nurture myself. And so I have a natural rhythm with that, but it doesn't particularly follow either the moon or any other really obvious cycle, but it does follow my inner promptings. Very well. So that's the cycle I try to tune into these days.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I really love that it's a cycle that is there and you notice it ebb and flow, but it doesn't necessarily match anything that you can follow, but that's completely fine. It's your cycle, it's your pattern, and you're attuned to that and listening to what you need at any point. That sounds like a really great way of just really simply honouring yourself. Thanks for sharing that, Jane. And I'd love to just share my cycle check-in today as well. So today I'm on day 34 of my cycle. And I think I'm just starting to spot. I think I've just noticed the first spotting. So getting ready to really drop into my bleed, which feels like I've been waiting for about a week. A slightly longer cycle than last cycle. So coming back to that point of stillness, and I'm really ready to retreat and reset, and I've been sort of waiting for my energy to pick up again when it comes on the other side of this bleed, and thinking, if this bleed doesn't arrive for any longer, how low is my dip going to be? It's sort of this awareness that I've been just feeling into, and just feeling really, really ready for this bleed. So I'm sure there's some wisdom in that, and just going to take it gently for the next few days this week. So that's where I am at, and that's where I come to you in this conversation from. So, which I might just ask you, Jane, are you in your more energetic ebb of your cycle, or in your more inwards part of your cycle right now?
A little bit of both. I'm certainly feeling energetic and able to be out here and doing things. And at the same time, there's always part of me, you know, tuning into what my own needs are. So it does work a little bit differently after menopause in that way. And sometimes there might be more, you know, more prioritizing the self-care, and then other times less. But I'm in a fairly balanced point of that at the moment.
Yeah, cool.
But it does, you know, just reflecting a little bit on what you were saying before, is for me, you know, the learning to tune in and the learning to respond, the learning doesn't stop, you know, it just continues on, you know, and there's that subtle, fine listening and observing ourselves and when to push past, because, of course, life has its demands and other priorities, and when to go, okay, now, you know, I really need to do that. But the other thing I've learned over the years, which, you know, really has happened over decades of menstrual cycle awareness, is what particular skills and tools and needs really, you know, have the best impact. And so sometimes it doesn't even take that long, but it's just creating that priority of just really giving myself to those things fully.
Amazing. Yeah. Thank you for your wisdom. I hope that's helpful for people who are either without a cycle, but certainly postmenopausal. I think that's incredible to hear your perspective. Thank you. Especially as someone who's been connected with their cycle for so many years. So Jane, you've created an incredible body of work in your career. I would love to just first invite you to share with us what brought you to this field of menstruation or cycle awareness, or, you know, what is it in your words, and what is your mission? What's it been?
Oh, I love this question, Charlotte. Thank you so much. I think the pivotal time in my life was when I was in my mid-20s, and up until that point I'd had probably a fairly, you know, common experience with contraception. I'd had a couple of goes at being on the pill, which weren't totally awful, but I didn't feel like myself. I didn't feel good on them, and feel good on it. It just didn't feel right. So that didn't last. Then I got an IUD, which upped my pain experience enormously. And so that lasted a year or two, and actually it failed on me. So, you know, that wasn't very encouraging either. And then I had a friend who she had gravitated toward a diaphragm, and her mum had encouraged her with that. And so I thought, okay, I'll try that. And I used a diaphragm for several years, and I really loved it, and it worked well for me. I wasn't needing to interfere with anything in my body except when I was really needing it, and even then it was not sort of a deep, you know, either chemical or mechanical interference. And the rest of the time there was nothing. So to me that was terrific. And then I met in my mid-20s a woman called Francesca Naish, who is still practicing in Sydney, and her business is natural fertility management, and she's an expert fertility naturopath. And so at the time that I went to her, I had a new boyfriend, and he was very interested in learning about this too. So we went along to Francesca, and this was the mid-80s. So this was, we had Roneo sheets and an audio tape, and, you know, it was kind of old style tech. but went home and started charting my cycle, checking mucus, writing things down every day. It's a wonderful little science project with our own bodies and charting our symptoms, taking my temperature and so on. And within a short time, the information that I'd been given about what the signs of fertility were started to show up and be so clear to me, so that it was really like a veil lifting. It's like I had this whole window into myself, certainly the physical aspects of ovulation and hormonal change and what impacts that had on my body, and certainly on my libido, my emotional life, my relationship. All, you know, I could see how clearly it all changed around the cycle. And also within a short time, I was able to use that for knowing when I was definitely not fertile, because the purpose was contraception at that time. So when I was definitely not fertile, and as time went on, I could grow that time when I was really clear that I wasn't fertile. And that was just so wonderful to be able to see that clearly. And I never felt like I was taking a risk with that. And I think that's one of the things people are most concerned about with fertility awareness methods. But really the information I was sort of getting from my body once I'd learned how to do that was so clear. And it worked for me right through my menstruating and cycling years for contraception after that time. But quite quickly what happened is the original purpose of me learning these methods, which was for contraception, became a side benefit, because the central value quickly became just knowing myself in this way, mm-hmm. you know, being able to read myself, know, oh, look, that's where I get those symptoms. That's where I'm getting these sort of headaches every month. Okay, now I'm empowered. I can do something about that. Now I can see that it's relating to that. So it started on the side of managing those sort of symptoms, but it also really, at the same time, really learning, because we didn't have anything like the books and the information that we have now around stages of the cycle and using those to live our best life. But I was able to see it through the cycle, how to manage the different times, to be able to go, oh, I'm day 26 now. Yes, I'm feeling, much less motivated in the world. I'm feeling, I couldn't care about my career that I'm normally so passionate about. And instead of being, the inner critic going nuts about this, I was able to go, oh, okay, I'm heading toward menstruation now. That's when I really can let go as completely as possible, I was able to become very confident that will pick up at the right time in the cycle, and so I could ride with the best of each stage of the cycle and learning that. So even though there wasn't so much literature, so much articulated, very little around then, I was able to work with that. And one of the dominant things that happened is that, and I've seen this again and again and again and again with women that I've shared fertility awareness or taught fertility awareness methods, is anger. Why didn't I know this before? Why wasn't I taught this, in an incremental way from, I got my period when I was 10, so from early on. I didn't need contraception then, of course, but information about, oh, and you'll have different levels of mucus at different stages of the cycle and what this means. I mean, there's so many fascinating things about how our cycle works physiologically, psychologically, emotionally, spiritually. And it's so empowering and we don't get it all in one teaching or all in one book. It evolves right through our cycling life. Anyway, so I experienced this anger and I've seen that so many times. But, of course, no one in my life knew to share that with me. There was no, my mum had her own experience of her cycle, but there was no articulation of those stages, and the medical people around didn't either, or teachers for that matter. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a thing. So that really, to me, that whole experience was sort of one big fat epiphany over months, and I'm still riding that because I still feel this is a fundamental human right to be able to have this information, to be able to receive it at the right time of our lives, and to have the menstrual cycle and our experience of it be utterly respected and utterly honored. Not just for ourselves in our own life, but through all levels of society.
Oh, Jane, hearing you share that, just I feel all like, oh, tingle, like I'm waving my hands and sort of feeling all just alive with your passion and your mission. Like that just feels so alive in me as well. But I really love what you said. It's not just for you. It's not just for it's for our children, but for all levels of society, and in so many different ways. It's not just for fertility or for contraception. It's that deep self-knowing and to have our place in the world and be respected, and fundamental human right. I mean, I agree with you so much there, but wow, that's so inspiring. And just at that point in my cycle where I feel like, dropping away, and you said about not caring so much about your career that you love so much, that's exactly where I'm at right now. But hearing you sharing that, it's like, yes, that is absolutely why this matters so much. Thank you for that. Gosh, so much in there. And I just felt to just share as well with anger. You really touched something on there for me. And I thought, I just had this quick flash whilst you were talking that I have experienced a lot of anger in my premenstrual phase. And it used to catch me by surprise and would be quite fiery and overwhelming. But the more that I understand where it comes in, and I can ask, what do I need, and what's it about, and what's the deeper meaning behind it, all of those things, it's lessened heaps, and I don't have the PMS that I used to have. It's really become something that isn't really there, isn't significant. And if it does come up, I can look at it and say, ah, what's that about then? And I think, you know, hearing you sharing that, that experience that you've had with so many women as well, it just speaks to just how important this is to understand everybody who has a cycle, just on so many of these different layers, it impacts us so much. So thank you so much for sharing that. It's incredible. So I would love to ask you, we're going to specifically talk about how listeners can become their own contraception expert and manage their fertility for health, well-being, and effectiveness. And I would just love to first ask, why? Why would somebody want to consider non-hormonal contraceptive solutions?
Oh, well, can I wind that question back a little bit, Charlotte, is to consider the whole question of contraception. And of course, this is particularly relevant for those of us who are heterosexual. And you know, for those of us who are, there are, and in relationships, there are decades of our life that we will be interested in contraception, in not conceiving, on average. So for many people, you know, they may, if they're choosing to have children, it might be one or two or three, but there are many years where they're not wanting to conceive. And depending when someone starts to be sexually active, that's on average mostly in teenage years, later teenage years, that will start. So it's a long, long time that we have needs around preventing, being able to have intimate relationships, but preventing pregnancy. So if we were to go to a doctor or a clinic of some sort and go, okay, you know, I don't want to get pregnant, what's the most effective method? We would be given these days quite possibly a marine IUD that releases hormones, or a rod in our arm that releases hormones over many years, there's no forgetting, we don't have to remember it, it's there, and they do provide very high effectiveness rates. So, you know, you'd think, okay, that's great, you know, that's job done, I don't have to think about it again. The trouble with these methods are that for many, and I would argue all, women who use them, there are side effects, and often very immediate, noticeable, awful side effects that go with those. We're often encouraged to just ride those out and it'll get better. But these are side effects. When I hear about them, and there's a lot of data on them, I think for any other purpose, and especially if this was across genders, it wouldn't be tolerated. If someone starts to use one of these, or the oral contraceptive pill, so any form, or the patch, or the vaginal ring, I mean, they're all releasing hormones. So if for any other purpose, if you were to dive into a suicidal depression immediately, would that be tolerated? Would we be told just to ride it out? Mm. You know, you have to wonder. And mental health and emotional effects are the most, in a way, the most common. And a lot of research that has looked into this has found, you know, close to 50% of women who start on the pill or other forms of hormonal contraception will develop, even where it hasn't been there before, clinically recognizable depression or mood disorders. This is serious stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about, oh, you know, this awful experience of depression and anxiety and the cost to society and the big epidemic that this is, and yet we don't regularly link these. We'll just send someone off, oh, well, off you go to your doctor or psychologist or get some counselling, and here, have some antidepressants at the same time. And to me, that's, you know, serious, societal abuse, really, in the name of let's not let you get pregnant. So just winding back a little bit, it's a huge issue. So of course, not to say that some people are using these methods, finding them that they work for them. These are not easy decisions to make. So I have enormous respect for whatever decisions anyone's needing to make about their contraception and about how they manage their relationship. What I do regret is that we don't, in almost all cases, retrospectively, women say they didn't have the information they should have had. They didn't have, and if they go back talking about some of these symptoms, often the practitioner is not aware of the links and won't acknowledge those links. So sometimes women have stayed on these forms of contraception for even decades, having health problems, emotional and physical health problems, and not making that link until they actually go off them and go, oh, you know, I'm actually not a depressive person. In truth, I actually do have a libido. In truth, I don't have these all these other sort of conditions that gradually build and are exacerbated by these very powerful drugs that impact our hormonal health. So for that reason, it just needs to be it needs the level of respect. Using these drugs are not just you just go on that and that's a rite of passage and away you go. They need to be given the level of respect and the level of care and a level of, you use them if and when you need them. But there are alternatives. And one of the statistics worth noting is that with particularly, let's just say with the implants, while they have the highest effectiveness rate of all at 99 point something, they also have a high dropout rate because the side effects are unbearable. And it doesn't mean the other people who keep them don't have side effects. It just means that their side effects, they tolerate, you know, they're going, okay, I'd rather have this than be pregnant, so I'll stick with it. Or they're not having that emotional impact acknowledged, and they're just trying to manage, you know, the drama and difficulty in their life that's probably being exacerbated by this drug. So when you have a dropout rate that's quite high, you know, years sooner than the drug would normally, the rods would normally allow, then what? You know, is there sufficient care to help people navigate what's going to work for them? What's going to work for them in their relationship or the way that they're needing contraception? You know, where's the education for the whole picture? And why I talk about, you know, becoming our own contraception expert is because we have so many years of needing this. You know, that there'll be different things that'll be suitable at different times. You know, for many young people when they first start, they just may, I'm not going to be interested in learning, you know, about my own body. Some do. But especially if we have encouraged that from early on. You know, a few years later, if they're aware that that's having an impact, they might go, okay, I'm ready to actually practice this in a different way. Using condoms properly can be very effective. Using them half-heartedly and occasionally missing them and not, you know, not trimming your fingernails and not not taking them off or putting them on in the right way, then they're not so effective.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's actually fully understanding and using them well. They can be a great contraception. And similarly, diaphragms. Condoms and diaphragms as being barrier methods, and we could also include with that the female condoms, which are inserted into the vagina and cover the internal aspect of the vulva as well. They all can be terrific contraception, and again, don't have an impact other than, you know, use at that time. So that they're what we would call barrier methods. So we've got, I would categorize all contraception into three methods. So there's what I call sterilization methods. So there's permanent sterilization through surgery. There's temporary sterilization, but I put temporary in inverted commas, through chemical sterilization, through the pill, rods, IUDs, because they're removing the menstrual cycle. So we are not fertile then. We're taking away our fertility. So there's sterilization methods, there's the barrier methods, and then there's the fertility awareness methods. And fertility awareness methods, I'm doing lots of hand signals here that only I can see, but, you know, I have to do it anyway.
I appreciate it.
So the fertility awareness methods includes things like the withdrawal method and the rhythm method, both of which have you know, higher degree of they have a higher degree of unreliability compared to modern fertility awareness methods. But at the same time, why I put them in that category is because they are relying on understanding our fertility, understanding the features and qualities of our fertility, and managing conception or not conceiving based on the fact of our fertility, rather than let's just wipe the whole thing away. So that's that principle. And the thing is, with fertility awareness methods, they can blend very easily and beautifully with barrier methods. So, for instance, if you're using fertility awareness and you know you're fertile at a particular time and you're wanting to make love, then you go, okay, well, bring out my diaphragm, my trusty diaphragm or trusty condoms, and away you go. But, of course, there are many ways to make love. They don't all have to be penetrative, potentially a conception event. Anyway, but it just depends. You know, these decisions are each couple's to make in each instance. But these days, fertility awareness methods, the research on them is when they're well taught and well practiced. The research is fantastic. It's 99% or more effectiveness rate for those methods. And as in my experience, when I learned them, initially I was doing charting, you know, for quite a number of months until I really got it. And all I would need to do is check my mucus when I went to the loo. And especially I had a pretty regular cycle, so I wouldn't need to do that every day. But, you know, from after my period up toward ovulation, I just keep track. I knew what my peak day mucus looked like, and I knew that I would ovulate the next day. So if the day after peak quantity, peak stretchiness, peak clear, you know, colour, and the next day if that reduced, I'd know that's my day of ovulation. But, of course, the trick with fertility awareness is knowing the days before, knowing what the beginning of fertile mucus looks like, because the last thing you want if you don't want to conceive is happy, swimming, lively sperm already in your system just hanging around waiting for the egg to come. So, you know, we need to know before. But I found, you know, it was very easy to read that. So I didn't need to keep charting, and I didn't need to keep taking my temperature. That was a great secondary method. If I wanted to just check, am I seeing, you know, if I had an infection at some point, am I seeing what I think I'm seeing? Or to be clear, okay, I've ovulated now and I give myself a safety margin, and then I'm done for the month. So it's really learning, and it's not rocket science or brain surgery. It's really learning and learning to trust our reading of our own body. And this is something that I think we fundamentally have not been given. And I think this is a big issue, not to learn and trust our own knowing of our own body and our relationship with our body. And fertility awareness is a, you know, totally amazing knowledge that we should all have, and then base our choices you know, we should know that we can know this, what that's like. And then if we have a time, we haven't been in a relationship for a while, we haven't been checking our mucus for a long time, we feel rusty with that, that's okay. You can use barrier methods, you can start again to chart, you can start again with those small windows where you know you're not fertile. You know, it's flexible. It's not just one here, take this and don't think about it anymore. It's a great health, a great system for our health and well-being. Sorry, I've really raved on here, Charlotte. But,
no, I appreciate it so much. Thank you. I really appreciate the depth of where you've gone into, and understanding those three categories of contraception makes a lot of sense to me as well. And I hadn't really appreciated that, you know, you considered those chemical contraceptives as a sterilization. And to hear that, it's like, wow, it is. Like you say, it stops ovulation, it stops the whole cycle, it takes away fertility. I think that's really powerful. But then to hear you talking as well, just at the end, I'm thinking from my personal experience about if you're coming back to it, if you're a bit rusty with it, if you're not quite sure, you know, that safety window is just a lot smaller. And you know how you can partner with barrier methods and things like that. I think that's great. So just to give a bit of context, from my perspective, I'm at the very, very tail end of breastfeeding. And so my cycle has been very irregular. And as it's come back over the last year and a half, it's been a bit all over the shop. And I've had generally quite long cycles and either ovulating later or even not at all. And so I practice the fertility awareness method. But sometimes, like with this cycle, I thought I had pinpointed ovulation on my chart and was due to bleed last week, but apparently not. We are here still waiting, and I think we're at that point. So I find it really interesting. And, you know, for me, it's about having that awareness of just where I'm at the minute and knowing, you know, what my kind of, like you said, that safe window is smaller, and I would use barrier contraception for those other times. But do you find that this is something that if somebody does have an irregular cycle for any reason at all, that it's still like a really useful method? Or how would you suggest somebody worked with fertility awareness if they had a long-term irregular cycle?
The beauty of these methods is that it can work just as well for irregular cycles. And because it's not based on the calendar, it's not based on, oh, well, here I am day 14, this is what should be happening. It's based on what's my body telling me. You know, what are the signs that I can read from my body that's telling me what's happening hormonally, that's telling me what's happening with my ovary? And I just want to reflect back on what you were saying, you know, at your tail end of breastfeeding and the way that your cycle's been. And that's really common. Mm-hmm. And it's what we would call, you know, you can have the build-up, the mucus build-up that looks like it's telling you, oh, I'm about to ovulate. And we call that the now you see me, now you don't. because sometimes it can build up a bit and it says, no, not right now. Might build up again. So it can be a little bit tricky at those times. And that's where probably there are easier times and harder times to actually start to learn fertility awareness. And I would say to begin to learn while you're still breastfeeding is probably the hardest, because it's all undergoing quite a bit of change. Not to say if the motivation's there, then I would start whenever you can. But for someone who has an irregular cycle long term, it does add a layer of trickiness, because they're going to have to pay extra attention to what their symptoms are. But there's in learning fertility awareness, there are clear rules. So you'd be looking for the changes in mucus, but I would be more inclined to stick with also checking temperature if I had an irregular cycle, because what you want to be able to see is the temperature rise that happens at ovulation and three higher temperature readings after that. And sometimes it might rise, and then start to fall again. So it's like, well, that was not really, you know, we can't trust that. But then it might be a few days later it rises and stays up. So, you know, it's that much more important to really spend that time and get to know, you know, get to know your own body signs and symptoms, and what that's telling you. If your cycle is irregular or there are other things that are not matching up. Sometimes people find the changes in mucus and the changes in temperature don't seem to be telling the same story. And this can indicate, you know, a major, you know, hormonal imbalance. So there are ways of reading beyond, you know, whether I'm fertile or not, there's ways of reading these charts to go, okay, well, look, my temperature goes up, but then it doesn't sort of stay up very well. It indicates low progesterone. You're not producing enough progesterone. What do we do about that? Naturopathically, herbs and so on can make a big difference to that, as can traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture and herbs, and I'm sure other methods as well that can really help, you know, boost both sides of our cycle, and our sort of mainly estrogen, progesterone, but other hormones involved as well.
Beautiful, thank you. That's really, really helpful, and I hope that's helpful for other people listening too. So, one question I would really like to ask you. There's two main questions that I really want to jump into, but the first one, just from conversations I've had, things I've been hearing with women, is people who have been taking a hormonal contraception for a while who want to come off. And I think, you know, it's safe to say that there can be withdrawal symptoms and it can be quite unpleasant. And I think some people are quite worried about coming off those you know, particularly long-term users where it's habit, it's normal, they know what to expect, you know, whether that's whatever the quality of that their life is like and their health. Would you recommend, is there a way of gently coming off something like that and then, you know, choosing an alternative method?
How gentle is the big question? And okay. It depends on... sometimes on an emotional level, sometimes years of being, I'll call it the pill, but I'll put that in inverted commas just to cover the whole lot of them. Sometimes years of being using those forms of contraception can dull or flatline our emotional responses and energy levels. So what can come roaring back is emotions. And I've had women say, you know, suddenly I felt so angry. So, you know, it's to be prepared. There can be, you know, a flood of feelings in a whole lot of ways. But at the same time, that can certainly be a positive. It's just that these have been flatlined and often experienced as kind of a low level, low mood, you know, a low level depression. As a woman I know some years ago who had been on the pill for 20 years, and she initially went on for, in her late teens, for skin problems, and then used it for contraception. And eventually, after hearing about, you know, side effects of the pill, decided to come off in her, I think she was about 37. And so she had that roaring anger. But one of the things she noticed a couple of months after stopping the pill, she woke up one morning and thought, what's that? What am I feeling? What's different? And she said, I'm feeling happy.
Gosh, isn't that sad? That was a new feeling.
And she had thought it was her. Because if you think, if you're starting the pill at 17, you're coming into your early adulthood, whatever that experience, whatever's changing with that drug, whatever changes, you think it's you. You know, I'm like that. She thought she was depressive. She thought she didn't have a libido to speak of, and numerous other health issues that started to build. And then when she went off, she also saw a naturopath at the same time, and I ran into her at another speaking event 6 months later. I did not recognize her initially. She looked so different. Her skin was clearer. Her energy was completely transformed. And she was so grateful to have heard that information and to have come off. And she has since married and had a child, and I'm not in touch all the time, so I don't know, whatever else. But her life really, you know, it was a very much a sliding doors situation. And I think that's probably true of many, many people out there. So I, you know, and I don't want to completely vilify, you know, this whole experience. It's going to be different for everybody. I just add that caveat, let's have informed choice and let's take care and take these choices really seriously and be informed so that we can make the best decisions for ourselves at all stages.
Yeah, amazing. Thank you. So, yeah, it's not necessarily a gentle process. It's going to be what it will be, but things will settle down. I'm also hearing the support of a naturopath might be helpful to support the hormones and that balance and address anything else that comes up as well. And just noticing what changes in you as well. I really relate to that story. I went onto the pill when I was 16 because I had bad skin and heavy periods, and it was just absolutely normal. What my mum did, the doctor just happily gave it me. No education, no suggestions of any alternatives, just you want the pill, here you go. And I was on that pill for about 14 years on and off. There was a time when I stopped, and that's when I'm from England, came backpacking, came to Australia and went overseas. And I said to the doctor before I went that I would like a year's supply of the pill, please. And she suggested I try a different one. And I only lasted about 3 or 4 months on that because I thought I was moody, homesick, angry. I was like, what is going on? Everything changed, and I was very, very low and had all kinds of problems with it, and then had to come off. So I had about 6 months of nothing. But at the time I had no real awareness of what that was like. But as soon as I got back to England, I went straight back on the pill for a whole bunch of further years until coming off, and had all kinds of crazy withdrawal symptoms that I really noticed that time. But, you know, I really would like to ask you about options for young people. You know, getting this sort of knowledge out to young people is so important, and something that you're so passionate about as well. And, you know, having a chat with a girlfriend the other day, and this topic came up, and I'd just love to, you know, I thought, well, I'm going to have to ask Jane about this. So what would you suggest as an option, or I'd just love to hear you speak to, you know, for people who are listening, if there's a mother out there whose, you know, child is, you know, in their teenage years, and, you know, perhaps they had gone on the pill or something like that, and just thinking, well, that's what I'm going to do with my child. Perhaps it's heavy periods or skin issues. Perhaps the child is becoming sexually active in their first relationship. And we might have this awareness now of we can chart our cycles, we can get to know our bodies and what it's telling us. In your experience, is this something that teens are, I think some parents are worrying that children might not be persistent or patient or take heed of these fertility signs, and are worried and are thinking that the pill might just be the only option to keep them, their children, safe in a sexual relationship. What would you, can I ask you to speak to that, please?
Hmm. Oh, it's very complex is the first thing I will say. And of course it's going to be different, you know, for each child or young woman, young person, each family, each parent. once a child's getting to a point of being sexually active, there's, you know, I would think there's not really a place for a mother or father to say you have to do this or that. You know, there can be advice giving, there can be support, and very often not even really knowing about it can be what happens in truth. So I think the issue is bigger and broader than that. And I think if we in our families start at the beginning being very positive about, you know, very body positive, very positive about bodies, helping understand, and very positive about the changes of puberty and the experience of menarche, celebrating the beginning of cycling and modelling how to do that well. And I can almost hear the mothers that are listening think, well, I didn't do this or I didn't do that. Just calm down. It's okay. We understand. But at whatever point, how are we looking after ourselves? We have busy lives. We have many demands on us. But are we able to just go, in those days when I need it, can I just cut back to the essentials? You know, I'm not going to cook gourmet meals. I'm not going to worry about house and garden. You know, photographers coming any day soon, whatever it is. You know, just get it down to the basics so that there's time for me to have a slow, long bath. There's time for I can go to bed early. I can go through those days, the days where I need to, most likely the days of menstruation, just going at the pace that my body wants to go instead of racing around and feeling crap and feeling angry and like nothing's working, whatever it is. But actually, you know, and even just putting in a small percentage of that help to ourselves, by doing that, we're modelling something different to our children. If they're open to us talking about it, fine. If they're not, our doing it is so powerful for them learning that this is important. So I know I've sort of digressed a little bit from your question, but I think it's not just one sudden thing that pops up. It actually is connected to the whole process, so that then, you know, if there's a process of how do we consider these things, how do we care for ourselves, how do we then practice make decisions about contraception that are also taking into consideration our health and our well-being, and the decision making and the connectedness in a relationship. All of those things for a healthy decision need to be part of that. Now, sometimes a healthy decision coming out of such a holistic process might still be to go on the pill for a time. But it is in that context. And when that's no longer the right decision, there will be another decision made, rather than there's this one choice and you do it, and if you have problems, bad luck kind of thing. Or you're on your own, really. So that's my understanding of that. And I had something else, but it's gone. Keep going.
Thank you, Jane. Yeah, so really hearing that, you know, we can role model our relationship to our body and that awareness and that care and listening and all of those things, and honouring the cycle as well. And, you know, it's really, even if a child doesn't want to hear it or talk about it, they're still witnessing it because we're still role modelling it. And I think that's really powerful, like you said. And then at that point of giving options and giving choices, and, you know, perhaps we can trust them as well, you know, to make their own decisions and take care of themselves, and rather than putting our own fears of, you know, perhaps the way we lived at that time, or, you know, the worst situation that might happen as we see it. But yeah, I hear you as well, that it might be what's needed for a time, and that is what it is. A lot in there. Thank you. I think that's really helpful.
Yeah. I was going to add something about, you mentioned before the therapeutic use of the pills. So it might be for heavy periods or irregular periods or skin issues. Now, this is a whole category in itself. So the pill was never designed to be used for therapy. And of course, if someone's having very painful periods, starting to take the pill can actually relieve those symptoms. Doesn't always, and often doesn't, but sometimes can. So I really also sympathise with people who might be given that option and take that option and get some relief. But the thing to know is the pill's not fixing that problem. It's not fixing whatever imbalance is causing that issue. It's just knocking out the warning light. It's knocking out the thing that's telling you that there's something's not right here. Again, I have respect and sympathy for the need for relief. But what I would like people to know and recognize is that there are therapies for whatever you might be given, you know, prescribed the pill for, you know, as a cycle issue. There are wonderful therapies that do great work to actually getting to the bottom of those issues and solving them, which will also help have a really great hormonal balance for the cycle. So it's very worthwhile to look beyond the immediate fix, or even while taking it therapeutically, actually look, well, there's a point at which soon that I want to come off that, so let me look at what else can be done here. But I would really encourage people to look for alternatives for their young people that will be so much better for their short, medium and long-term health for therapeutic solutions.
Amazing. Thank you for sharing that. And, yeah, that was definitely what I was told it would fix, but it really just put, you know, a pause on it, because when I came off it, all of those things just came straight back again. So I think that that's really important to mention, and thank you for doing that. And I love the mention there that, you know, there are actually solutions out there that we can find that actually do help with root cause issues, and not just changing someone's entire biochemistry unless it's, you know, absolutely necessary. So thank you, Jane. I've really, really enjoyed this conversation. I've learned things myself, and I'm sure it's going to be absolutely so useful for people who are listening. I would just love to ask you just one last closing question, as I do with everybody. If you would just like to share in your own words, what is the greatest thing that listening to your body has given you?
Oh, that's a wonderful, wonderful big question, Charlotte. I think it's respect and wisdom. Respect for, you know, the experience that I'm having and where it is and what's happening, and therefore that opens the doorway to what I need to do if I can respect it first up. And through that route comes wisdom, the wisdom of knowing what I need and what's going on. And I think that's been very positive for my, you know, for the last 40 years, for my health and well-being on all levels.
What a beautiful answer. Thank you for sharing. Well, thank you, Jane, so much. I'm going to pop all of your links to where people can find you in the show notes, and there's things like your celebration day for girls, your fertility work, the amazing book about bloody time, which I think is just fantastic, and the research that you've done there, and so many of your other books too. Yeah. Well, thank you for your contribution to this field of work and to all of the people that you've helped in your career. It's incredible and so inspiring. Thank you, Jane.
Well, thank you, Charlotte. It's been really delightful to meet you and to chat with you today.
Thank you so much for listening in. If you're loving this podcast and you'd love to help me spread the wisdom shared, please leave a review or rating, or share this with somebody who you think would love to listen in. I'm really passionate about creating ripples of change and getting this information to more women, girls, and people with a cycle, so that they can reclaim their cyclic natures too.
And if you'd love to dive in deeper with learning more about how to connect with your cycle and rites of passages, come and join our free Wild Flow Circle community, or choose a course and learn with me on my online learning hub. All the links are in the show notes. And until next time, be well and go with the flow of your cyclic nature.